Hey there, students. Thanks for joining us for another segment of EOC Review. In this section, we are going to talk about the Civil War and focusing on USHC 3.2, which addresses the war itself. So let's go ahead and begin. Now, we start off with the election of 1860, the election of Lincoln, which was the direct cause of Southern secession. Now, the Deep South secedes when Lincoln's elected. Then the Upper South waits. What is he going to do? And when we look at the causes of Southern secession, there are several of them, all right? First of all, conflicting views about federal authority and states' rights. Now, of course, we get into a big argument about this stuff. I'm going from the South Carolina academic standards, all right? So first of all, conflicting views about federal authority and states' rights. Then, economic and cultural differences between the agricultural South and the industrializing North. Then three, debates over the expansion of slavery into the Western territories. Now keep in mind that this is not so much an abstract debate about the merits of slavery as much as a debate about how much slavery is going to spread. Abraham Lincoln was not an abolitionist before the war. He was a free soiler. The war turned him into an abolitionist. And then, of course, the election of Abraham Lincoln as president in 1860. And this is really the direct cause, all right, as far as Southern secession, the direct cause is the election of Lincoln. And the Southern states create the Confederate States of America, which is what the Wikipedia would call an unrecognized state, that this was actually, they formed a government, they kept their state governments, they were, you know, had everything proper except not really recognized by other countries, per se. Now, so the Confederate States of America, they are going to war, and when we look at the war-making capacity of the North and the South, who had the advantage as far as population?
The North,
about a 2-to-1 population advantage. As far as manufacturing capacity, once again, a Union advantage, that the Union has much more of a manufacturing capacity in order to create military equipment and supplies. Money, the North, the Union, okay? So what you see here over and over again is that when it comes to making war, the Hamiltonian program is superior to the Jeffersonian program. And the North is much more ready to make war as far as that goes. Now, you might ask, why is it that the South was willing to go to war, was willing to stake its survival as a nation, and fight a country with all of these advantages? And the reason is because the Confederates had some advantages too. Now, first of all, they had more competent generals, all right? So military leadership was an advantage of the Confederacy. Another is home field advantage, that they were playing defense. Now, when you think about the objectives, the North has to essentially conquer the South. The North has to win. The South just has to tie, really. The South just has to make the North tired of fighting the war. Now, defense is an objective, all right? So not conquest like the North. Now, high stakes, all kinds of other stuff here. Now, as far as political leadership, okay, the North's got an advantage, Union with population, manufacturing, and money. The Confederates being defensive, the Confederates with military leadership, the North, the Union, had a much higher advantage in political leadership, namely in the person of Abraham Lincoln, who just was really about finding the right people to do the job, whereas Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy, was about micromanaging. He'd been to West Point, thought he knew all kinds of stuff about the military. So that's what you've got there. And keep in mind the Anaconda Plan. Now, this was a plan that the North had to fight a long war, that the North's objectives were, first of all, to blockade, okay, a naval blockade of the South, second, to capture Richmond, and third, to cut off the Confederacy at the Mississippi River. All right, so going into some decisive battles of the Civil War. Now, Fort Sumter in 1861 began the Civil War. This was a Confederate victory. All right, so that's really its claim to fame, that began the Civil War. Then in 1862, there's the Battle of Antietam, which is a tactical draw that nobody really won the battle per se, which is pretty impressive given that McClellan had Robert E. Lee's plans in hand and all of that stuff. But a tactical draw, but the Union turned this to their strategic advantage because Lee did not win. And by using that to claim victory, then you had the bloodiest single day of the war at Antietam. Now, of course, Gettysburg being the bloodiest overall battle, but this gave the North and gave Abraham Lincoln the grounds to issue the preliminary Emancipation Proclamation, which is going to begin to turn the war from just a war to preserve the Union to a war against slavery. And then you've got really the turning point in 1863, the battles of Gettysburg and Vicksburg. Gettysburg being Lee's first tactical defeat, that Lee had never been soundly defeated in battle. And Lee has to go back and retreat to the Confederacy and really doesn't have the same kind of aura of invincibility ever again after that. Vicksburg. This is where the Confederates lost control of the Mississippi River. So you see that anaconda tightening around the Confederacy. And then finally, Lee surrendered to Grant in 1865 at Appomattox Courthouse. And that was the 150th anniversary, I think, was just celebrated a couple of weeks ago. So keep in mind Antietam being that bloodiest battle, Lee retreats, and that sort of thing. Now, let's see. All right, and I mentioned, let's see, I don't have a slide, it looks like, for Civil War generals, but keep in mind that the EOC identifies three generals, Robert E. Lee, Ulysses S. Grant, and William T. Sherman. Okay, so you think about Robert E. Lee as the general of the Confederacy, you think about Ulysses S. Grant from, you know, a Union general, and William T. Sherman, of course, who I'll mention in the context of Sherman's March. But Lee, Grant, and Sherman, you could be compelled to know who they are, either need to identify them directly or perhaps just know who they are to answer a question. All right, now the Emancipation Proclamation figures pretty big into this indicator. So let's take a look. First of all, the effective date is January 1st, 1863. Very easy to remember. January 1st, 1863. 1863 kind of being a midpoint. And this is very significant because it is a turning point in defining the war. And which slaves were freed? Now, the only thing about this is on the day it was issued, the Emancipation Proclamation did not free a single slave. That it only applied to areas that were classified as being in rebellion. If the Union had pacified an area, then that was it. All right, the Union had pacified it. Tennessee, southeast Louisiana, parts of Virginia, the entire state of West Virginia, the border states. Abraham Lincoln is not out to free your slaves. Abraham Lincoln is out to win the war and preserve the Union. And Abraham Lincoln says that, look, this is a necessary war measure. All right, but as a necessary war measure to cripple the Confederacy's capacity to fight, it also strengthened the moral cause of the Union. So the Union was more popular in Britain, in France, in places where the Confederates were trying to get recognized and try to get foreign recognition, kind of like the U.S. did in the Revolution. So that pretty much put an end to any hope of recognition by the Confederacy abroad. And by what authority did Lincoln have to free these slaves? As commander-in-chief, as a necessary war measure. So keep that in mind. And why didn't he do this sooner? It's because Lincoln is having to, you know, he's having to pacify the border states. All right, so just keep that in mind, that he's got the border states to worry about and a lot of political concerns. Now keep in mind, more than anything, Lincoln's number one war aim was to preserve the Union, that any goal is secondary to this. All right, so the Emancipation is in addition to preserving the Union, which is always, even before, after, whatever, Lincoln's primary goal in doing the war. All right, fighting the war and that sort of thing. So that puts the Civil War at an end, and when we continue next time, we will go into Reconstruction. So hopefully you'll be with us for that, and see you in a bit.